and Revenue is open. Good morning, committee. Good morning, everyone. Believe it or not, today we're going to start off with central assessment. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 571 and Senate Bill 611. The dash twos are still being processed. They should be ready about noon. However, we have a summary, a conceptual framework that Dr. Warner and Kyle will go over with us. Those are on OLIS. The finished product should be available on OLIS around noontime. And it's our goal to walk through these for the committee and for everyone else, and with the goal of passing out a bill tomorrow, sometime in the morning or in the afternoon tomorrow. So, Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. You have in OLIS a 611-2, we're calling refined conceptual framework. It's refined only compared to the last one. I wouldn't call it refined. But we tried to highlight some of the changes that were discussed yesterday, discussed within the work group, and in working with Legislative Council and Department of Revenue. If we maintain the same structure with the three main pieces to it, and I'll highlight the changes in each of those areas. If you look under 1B, as you recall, the initial proposal was to exempt franchises and FCC licenses, which are currently exempt under current law. We've added to that satellites and those, and from total valuation. And satellites, in the way that it's being drafted now, will be limited to communication properties. The other two franchise or FCC licenses are generally applicable across all centrally assessed properties. So that's the only significant change to that, kind of what we call the tier one, or something that would apply to all centrally assessed properties.
Paul, if I could just clarify, and that exemption on the franchises and licenses was sort of done in trade, I guess not in trade, but instead of putting in depreciation schedules. And can you explain the upside, downside, and the trade-offs of that policy choice?
The franchises are not as broadly applicable as the depreciation would be. So it is more limited. It does affect several companies. In particular, those in the cable industry are affected by that. It is also something that we have explicit value measures for. So the big difference with that compared to depreciation is that it's a lot easier administratively to assign a value and subtract it from the total value of the company. And the way this will work is this: the value of those franchises is subtracted from the total system-wide value. And then from that point, you work down to what's allocatable to Oregon. So that's the main difference there. Is a lot easier to administer, and it's more narrow in scope.
Thank you.
Under B or 2, the special exemption for qualified projects, what we call Tier 2, these are the specific projects. And we did, Senator Riley pointed out, we went from gigabytes to gigabits to make sure that was correctly put in the language. Those standards and speed remain in the dash two. PUC is the certifying agency. We did include language that they had suggested to you yesterday during the hearing to make it clear that it was a price adjustment, that it was a market, that it wasn't a market, but rather a service area that they were looking at. The other specifics we've added under the actual calculation of the cap, we plugged in a number. Yesterday was blank. We plugged in $250 million. As an alternative, and this would operate the same way the SIP does, regardless of the value, allocatable value back to Oregon, the 250 would be the cap amount. The other alternative, and this is a greater than comparison, would be the sum of the tangible real personal property the company has in Oregon. So if the company was a communications company, had data centers in Oregon, but was a centrally assessed communication company, the basis of their valuation would be the tangible property in Oregon. And as Department of Revenue pointed out to you yesterday, they don't go out and appraise those centrally assessed properties, and that would be something that they would have to do in addition in order to make this workable. So we plugged in an application fee provision in the dash twos that would cover the cost of appraisals for this situation. Again, we're anticipating, we of course don't know specifically of any company. We know some that would be perhaps interested, but we don't know any that would specifically carry out this tier two type investment, but we would not expect there to be very many. This is something there's going to be a handful at the most over the next decade if this became law.
So Paul, the policy objective here is if someone could meet that objective for the super high speed internet, they wouldn't be penalized by having, you know, it would be a large company, by a high property tax bill that calculates their intangibles, and therefore they could go forward, which would be good for consumers and businesses. It would benefit from not only from the jobs in this investment and all that, but from the service of that high speed.
That's exactly right, Mr. Chair. The public good benefit that would come from having this communication infrastructure. In terms of the cap itself, using the real market value there, I mean, this is still technically a centrally assessed property, and there would be a calculation done, and then the cap would be in comparison to that. But really what we're saying under 2C, is that they're really going to, in effect, be locally assessed because it's just going to be their tangible property. So they would be treated like a locally assessed company if they meet these conditions. So the number three, which is the component segment of the bill that deals with the data centers and kind of where you started, I think, this discussion and really is the contents of 571, we continue to try to refine that language, and so that should be something that you'll be able to look at explicitly when that comes out later today. The only thing I added here, we continue to have the 10% limitation, and that's for communication-related activities, and then to clarify what are not communication activities, retail trade and energy-related activities we had before, we've also added a specification of data storage facilities are not communication related activities for in terms of calculating that 10% threshold.
So if Apple builds expensive stores in downtown Eugene or wherever, if they put up a solar complex or if they have warehouses to store equipment, that doesn't count as 10%.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. That'll be explicitly laid out in the dash twos.
And as far as the revenues picture, I know we don't have all of the information in yet, but are we generally in the same place as we were a week ago and we had depreciation factored in?
Yes, I believe so, Mr. Chair. I think the one issue that's come up is, and that we've actually had to spend quite a bit of time on, is around the base in which we calculate the franchise exemption, and that had come up as an explicit issue, and we have worked on some language that would put us in that range that we had talked about with the initial depreciation proposal. So I think that's going to be in that range. We are not certain at this point what the revenue impact would be of the satellite exemptions, and we'll have that hopefully shortly after the meeting today.
Okay. Cake is almost baked. Questions for Dr. Warner or Kyle? It's like opening the oven and saying, oh, just a little while longer.
Just which flavor is it?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you both. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 571 and Senate Bill 611.
Carrying them over.
And we'll carry them over to our next meeting. I also want to make one announcement I've been asked to make by the committee staff, that email statements submitted for bills but not presented in person will be made part of the committee records. The chain letters, however, will be submitted once for the record and all emails for public viewing, by the document, bill number, and the meeting date listed as public email submissions. And what that is code for if we get 1,000 exactly worded emails, we're not going to put 1,000 emails into the record. We're going to put it in once. Is that fair? Okay. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 26. Mazi.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 26 brings to you an issue that has a little history in the committee. The language of the bill. Actually, I kind of drive these people out, don't I?
Yeah, that's 2 days in a row.
Have this, could you be a guest at one of my other committee hearings? I'd like to drive them out.
Right. You get the police enforcement to arrest them, maybe.
Yes, security.
So the bill itself, what it does is repeals a sunset of allowing the use of federal forest funds in the county road fund for the patrolling. Policy decision that you're looking at here is that you have federal forest reserve money that comes into counties and that is split into 25% for schools and 75% for county road funds. Now, before 2007, these funds were restricted for only road use. In 2007, the 2007 legislature allowed or enabled Douglas and Lane counties to use some of those funds for patrolling the county roads by law enforcement. And it put a deadline on or a sunset of January 2nd, 2014 on that ability. The 2011 session through Senate Bill 443 extended that sunset to January 2nd, 2016. And the 2012 session through House Bill 5175 expanded kept the sunset, but expanded the number of counties that could use that provision to about 7 counties, that's including Coos Curry, Douglas, Josephine, Klamath, Lane, and Lynn. And it also allowed the federal money to be loaned to the rest of the counties that receive that type of federal funds to be loaned on a 3-year basis as long as it's part of the budgeting process of the counties. So in essence, I think you will hear today, and you have in all us a number of testimonies and letters. I don't think you will have anything against, but mostly letters of support for removing that sunset and making that policy decision permanent.
Okay, I have a couple of people signed up here, and I don't know if you all want to come up together or separately, but Byron, Spence, David?
You look like you were going to drag him up with you, too.
He's more than welcome. Okay. Chairman Hassan, members of the committee, thank you for your time this morning. My name is Chief Deputy Byron Trapp with the Lane County Sheriff's Office in Lane County, Eugene, Oregon. And with me today is Captain Spence Slater, also with the Lane County Sheriff's Office.
Senate Bill 26 is very important for Lane County's public safety services. We urge you to hold a work session on this bill and move it to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Today, the federal timber revenues from the road fund are funding 60% of Lane County's patrol services. That's over $3 million in this year's fiscal budget. Last year it was over 70%. I'm thinking it was about 78%. I don't have the exact number. But for several years, it has been a significant funding system for Lane County's public safety. Removing the sunset is critical for our ability to maintain ongoing public safety services in Lane County. We have struggled in recent years to maintain 24-hour patrol services in Lane County. We are at one point we're as low as 16 hours of on-duty deputy sheriffs in unincorporated Lane County per day. We have been consistently around 20 hours a day for the last 5 years. If we were to remove all of the federal funding, road fund funds from our patrol budget, that would drop us today to 8 hours of on-duty deputy sheriffs for all of Lane County, which is just under 100,000, 98,000 residents of Lane County that rely on the sheriff's office for their primary police service and 911 response. And I'll keep my comments limited to that unless there's questions. I just wanted to make sure that you heard from us of how critical it is for Lane County. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I have nothing. Okay. Questions.
I guess I just have more of a comment, and maybe this is better directed at Senator Edwards, is, you know, we've got these very serious funding problems in your part of the world.
My part, too.
But Lane County, you know, is we've got a university there, we've got population, we've got commercial activity. I just am surprised that we got to this point in, you know, what is arguably one of the most vibrant places in Oregon.
Well, and I can respond a little bit to that, and we agree. I think, at least I understand, and I think by and large those of us who work within Lane County's budget recognize how we got there. You know, for years, Lane County received significant dollars from federal timber harvest. Mm-hmm. And so it made sense that Lane County's Board of Commissioners and elected officials didn't rely heavily or tax the local populace when they had significant revenue externally. Over the years, we've had tax limitation measures that have really put a limit on the ability to raise local revenue about the same time the timber harvest declined. Mm-hmm. So Lane County's base property tax rate is $1.28 a thousand. And it's considered a metropolitan county of Oregon. Comparatively, we should be, if you want to say we should be consistent with the other metro counties, Marion, Clackamas, Washington, we should be somewhere around $3.50 to $4 a thousand. So we're just about getting what we pay for at the local level. We still have some external revenues that come in from state and federal government. We're not living on Lane County property taxes for Lane County services, but we're just about there. And so, you know, we've looked and struggled at other ways to find revenues. We have the seventh lowest property tax rate in the state, and we have the second lowest total collection per capita of property taxes in the state. So there does need to be a shift somewhere. This is clearly not the long-term perfect solution, but this is something that is critical to us while we find that solution, and that's why we're here requesting that you move this forward for us.
Questions? We should do a better job. We should do a better job of managing our federal forests.
Well, how did you know I was going to talk
about
that? Well, and you're spot on as what happened in many counties. The other side of the conversation is you still have this extremely large makeup of the county that is in federal ownership that
certainly
probably needs to contribute in one form or another, and we're still struggling with those issues. When you go to counties like Marion or Multnomah, almost every square inch of the property is being assessed and contributing to that county. In our counties, it's just simply not. Josephine County, about 75% of the land mass is not contributing anymore to the county. So I understand the plight, but there's more than one conversation to this.
There's more than one conversation. Yes. One of the things I know in Washington County, in a city in Washington County, we're paying the maximum property taxes plus a little bit more with options and things. So there's that side of it too. Commissioner, did you have a presentation?
I did. Thank you, Chair Haas and committee. Commissioner David Brock-Smith, Curry County. Yeah. And I echo the conversation that's been occurring here already this morning. I also am the District 4 Chair for the Association of Oregon Counties, so a lot of our county commissioners are back in D.C. dealing with this issue right now with the federal forest payments and the sustainable forest management that we need on our federal lands. So on behalf of District 4 is four of the seven counties that this bill is allowed to help are within my district, Douglas, Josephine, Coos, Jackson, and of course Curry. This piece of legislation is a lifeline literally for Curry County. Now Curry County's overall budget minus the road budget is about $6.5 million, and I know that doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a lot for us. We've cut to the bone in Curry County's budget. We've outsourced public and mental health. We've outsourced our animal control. We've done everything that we could do to cut back on staff. We're half the employees that we were 7 years ago. And we budgeted for $1.45 million of road funds to supplement the sheriff's budget within the parameters of the bill. We literally would not have Sheriff's Patrol without this budget, without the ability to use road funds. And the sheriff has his own efficiencies. For example, we do use some of the road funds to supplement the 911 dispatch budget, but those 911 dispatchers are also sitting in command and control of the jail. So they're not only are they operating the doors for the jail and watching the security monitors for the jail and the courthouse, but they're also handling 911 functions. That's where we're at in Curry County. And when you go to the federal forest issues, 67% of Curry County is owned and managed by the federal government. And with farmland and private timberland and 1% of state, it really only leaves us to fully assess and tax 4.5% of our land mass. And at the second lowest rate, a property tax at 59.9 cents per thousand, I agree with the conversation here that there is just no way to operate public safety services. Even with this bill passage and the use of the funds, we didn't receive a safety net payment in 14. We will still be about $1.5 million short. And so that's why I know our Congressman Walden is working on this issue to try to reestablish that emergency safety net payment, because Curry County, the last thing we want to do is pull the trigger on House Bill 3453, and we're right there. And without this piece of legislation, we'll be there.
That's the state income tax Marshall Plan kind of that we passed in 13.
13, yes, sir.
Yeah. I do have a question.
Yes.
Not a comment, but a question. So you said about $3 million this year you'll receive from that?
Yes, sir.
What would that equate to positions?
We have currently budgeted 21 deputy sheriff positions for our patrol section with 6 supervisors. And so that would eliminate 2 full shifts, and there's 7 deputies per shift, 7 deputies and 2 sergeants per shift. So that would be 14 deputies and 4 sergeants would be eliminated with that three. It's actually just under $3.2 million this year.
18 positions, roughly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions, really for the record, and then a statement afterwards, if you would, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify from the county's perspective, either one, that my understanding of how the process works now is basically this is a permissive bill. It then allows the county commissioners and the county budgeting process to work within their own budgeting process, budgeting committees, public hearings to say, okay, this is where we think we need to put the money to best address the public safety needs of the county. And so it's not like you go do this. This just allows the existing seven counties to use this tool in a permissive manner to provide public safety. Am I correct, Commissioner Sheriffs?
That's correct.
Chair, Vice Chair Boquist, you're very correct, sir.
Observation, Mr. Chair. We started this out way back. We amended this in 2012. Since 2012 to 2015, the legislature has become aware that there are other counties that are now in financial distress facing the same problem. Secretary of State has just done a recent report that says that there are other counties, primarily some within the ONC bracket, that are in distress, in which this is a tool and a function that I would suggest that there might be three or four other counties between the Secretary of State's report and between what we know that ought to be provided the same permissive language within this bill as a tool for them to address this. And I'll be blunt. Lane County has more deputies than most of my five counties have at this point, simply because the distress is not in Curry County and Lane County just that we think is, I mean, just across the river right now, there is no patrol half the time in Polk County, and we're talking less than a mile across that river.
Right.
And if you're in an accident or you're being raped or any of that category, you're just SOL at this point. Nobody is available to respond. And I would make, I guess, the plea that we might want to look at this bill in terms of saying, are there some other counties we ought to put into here so that they have a toolbox should our legislative delegation be successful in some of their plans, that they would have those tools available to them too to provide public safety.
Thank you, Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about, and I'm pretty supportive, but I do have a question about your relationship at the county level with the City of Eugene Police, and particularly in the unincorporated areas, which I live in the City of Eugene. In Santa Clara, right across the street from me, is unincorporated. One house to my left is unincorporated, but my cul-de-sac is all incorporated. So technically I have City of Eugene police coverage.
Yes.
Do the people across the street have Lane County sheriff coverage, or through your agreement with the City of Eugene, do those officers respond everywhere in that Santa Clara area inside the UGB? Just explain to me a little bit about that, how that relationship works.
Sure. Chair, Senator Edwards, it's a little bit confusing, a lot confusing to some in many ways. We have really tremendous working relationships in Lane County through all law enforcement, Oregon State Police, all the cities. And we have, over the years, responded inside the city to assist the City Police Department, Eugene, when they have a significant event that ties up their resources. Sheriff's Office has handled their primary calls for service until their officers are freed up or they call in additional staff. Likewise, when we have significant events occurring or our officers need assistance, they don't hesitate and respond and assist. When it comes to routine calls for service outside of the emergency phase, mm-hmm. is where it gets a little more difficult. And as you can expect, a resident of any city that owns its own police department, like Eugene or Junction City or Cottage Grove or Florence, or you name the town, big or small, the residents that live within that city that are paying those city taxes are paying those city taxes for their police department to provide services to them. When those police officers are outside of the city providing resources to Lane County unincorporated residents who are not paying for those services, it's a deficit to the city and it's a benefit to the county. So we have to be very careful, and we know that we've only got a few chits to cash in with any city police department, and so we're very careful when we cash those. and we make sure that we're cashing them on circumstances that we really don't have an option. It used to be that Lane County had over 100 to 150 Oregon State Police troopers in Lane County. There were two full stations in Lane County. Cottage Grove had a full station, and Springfield had a full station. There was a substation in Oak Ridge and Florence. And today, there's one station in Lane County, that's Springfield. They don't have any other substations. They have outposts in Oak Ridge and Florence. OSP is down to about 14 to 16 state police troopers for patrol in Lane County. So we have learned that we can't police Lane County by ourselves as the sheriff's office. We don't have enough staff. Oregon State Police can't police it by themselves. Together, every day, we police Lane County. It's not uncommon at all for a deputy and a trooper to respond to the same call for service, or two troopers to handle one call and a couple of deputies to handle another call, and blend our resources. We have their radio in our car. They have their radios in our cars. We've worked together for years to make this work. We have a number of agreements where Oregon State Police has agreed to handle all traffic crashes in Lane County, regardless of the jurisdiction of the highway. If it is a serious or fatal injury collision that requires any kind of reconstruction, it's very expensive for us to manage a training curriculum of reconstructionist experts. And so we've come up with various systems. It's much easier for us to coordinate with the Oregon State Police because we kind of share jurisdiction, all unincorporated. It's much more difficult to establish those ongoing relationships with cities when their residents are paying the bill and the county's not. And we can't rely on that ongoing. That's a very long-winded question or answer. I apologize for that. But it is difficult, and you would think that the neighbor right across the street from you who lives in unincorporated Lane County should get, you know, equitable service that you get, but they don't. And so where you would get a Eugene City police officer at your door for a felony property crime, we send your neighbor a form in the mail that says, fill out your own police report, mail it back to us. That's the other problem that we've discovered over the years is we know we are underreporting by over 60% property crime in Lane County because we know how many forms we mail out for the complaint we get, and we only get about 30% of those forms back in the mail. So on its surface, we know clearly we're underreporting, you know, a huge percent of property crime in Lane County, not to mention the people that don't even call anymore because they know the sheriff won't come for a number of calls. We really only respond to person crime or in-progress crime that needs immediate resolution with a deputy. If it's not at the urgent, immediate resolution issue, it's person crimes only. So there is not an equitable delivery of public safety services in the metro area where there's a mix, a blend of unincorporated and incorporated residents, and it causes a lot of frustration amongst the community. We don't have an easy answer to it, but we can't rely on the cities to provide those out-of-jurisdiction services at their own expense.
Yeah. Chair Haas, Senator Edwards, is the same with Curry County. We have 5 patrol deputies to cover the 1,648 square miles and over 230 county road miles. We have great working relationships with our 3 cities and their 3 city police departments, but it's not equitable for the city police to go outside in the unincorporated areas because their citizens pay for their police protection. So,
yeah, no, Mr. Chair, I mean, I agree. I mean, we don't have the in neighborhoods like mine. We don't have the same police coverage. I would argue that it is equitable because some of us are paying for it and some people aren't paying for it.
Right.
And if you ask any of the people that are unincorporated, though, whether or not they want to pay for it and be annexed, they will quickly say no. So that's, you know, kind of a political conundrum that we find ourselves in. But, you know, I bring this up because I'm concerned that metropolitan area residents are getting a disproportionate amount of your attention, and you're not able to cover some of the outlying areas where you could have perhaps an agreement. And I think you do have an agreement with the City of Eugene Police, I guess, in emergency situations.
Yes.
To respond. But and I guess my final comment would be, while you only have the resources to mail a form to folks to report a property crime,
I don't know that it's necessarily any less effective than the officers that have showed up at my house twice for property crimes. And, you know,
you're a good officer.
It's not like it's a, not like there's any resolution, you know. I mean,
right.
They take the report and they go, okay, well, if it turns up, we'll let you know. And, but, you know, they just don't have the resources, even in the city, to deal with you know, how much property crime there is. So,
yeah,
we'll get off my soapbox now.
And then the underreporting shows falsely that crime rates are down.
That's great.
Right.
Yeah, we get a lot of feedback from our residents. They do track that, and they tell us all the time, I don't know why you think you need more cops. The crime rate's down. You guys are doing better with less cops. It is. It's a conundrum that challenges us in many ways.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Chair, as I would point out, the two of these counties have more patrol officers in the patrol divisions than I have in some of my counties, and my counties aren't on the list. That didn't used to be that way. It's just the way it's unfolded, exactly what the captain and the undersheriff were saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for traveling here. You guys got a tough job. So if there's no other business on this bill or no one else to testify, I should say, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 26. And that is it on our agenda today.
Wow.
So that is it on our agenda today.